Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So, whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 024.DA1106, certificate number 45359, the Anarchy.
Saying that a little archly, given your young anarchist's background, shouldn't you say the word anarchy a little more reverently and then maybe draw the A on the wall behind you?
Yeah, I was saying it sort of influenced by the larch.
The anarchy.
I feel like
how to recognize different types of dystopia.
The anarchy. If you put the in front of it, it suggests an anarchy rather than anarchy as a philosophy.
This is one particular anarchy in the UK. We've had anarchies in Omnibus before. Slab City
is
was a kind of anarchy.
We talked about the anarchist cookbook.
We did the cookbook, right? Yeah. This is a period which historians call the anarchy, which I was surprised to discover. This was the big twist for me, that it existed.
Okay.
Not being a medieval historian, which I assume is true of our tentacled future listeners.
I bet you fully 5% of all Omnibus subscribers are medieval historians.
And are already typing an email to tell us so.
They're super mad. They're not as mad as the whiskey distillers, but...
But I'm a layperson. I feel like I have a pretty good sense of who was king when, and who Shakespeare thought was the bad one, and who Robin Hood thought was the bad one.
Absolutely. It was always part of a proper education, right? That you at least had a thumbnail timeline of everything between the Council of Nicaea and the Renaissance.
And for me, particularly, I don't know why, but particularly in Britain, like for some reason, knowing the British houses and kings seemed like much more of a mark of our cultural lineage than knowing the French or German ones. And I don't know if I could defend that.
Well, except Charlemagne, right? There's always that bubble for Charlemagne and...
Yeah.
Erasmus or whatever, you bounce over a couple of times.
There's like one Pope to know. There's one Holy Roman Emperor to know. But it did seem like for a while...
False popes.
Is it because of Shakespeare? Is it Shakespeare's fault that we think we have to know all the numbers of all the kings, all the regnal numbers?
They were dark ages, Ken. How do you even know what was happening in Poland?
So you have
to go to Poland.
So despite having what I thought was a pretty good amateur's grasp of British history, I had no idea that there was an English Civil War in the 12th century. And even better.
I'm only learning about it now. There was?
You've just discovered. And even better, a strong female protagonist, which is what everyone wants today.
So this is post-Doomsday Book.
Yeah, it's post-Norman Conquest. Yeah, also post-Doomsday Book, right? That would be...
But not long after.
No, we could start with William the Conqueror himself, if we wanted.
The
Norman Conquester and keeper of the book in question.
Because we know, as part of our now apparently like Swiss cheese hole-filled sense of England, we all are versed in Norman Conquest. So
sure.
Let's start there, where we know things.
But that's because there's a nice tapestry about it.
Right.
If there was a beautiful tapestry...
Turold the Dwarf.
If there was a beautiful tapestry about Ethelred the Unready, we would know everything about him, too.
Right.
But they're just... So that's a piece of advice to our listeners.
Well, I know Ethelred the Unready.
Have you made a tapestry of your accomplishments to make sure that... the future doesn't miss when Halley's Comet was in the sky in your life.
Wouldn't that be nice? You know, we do have some listeners who are quilters.
Embroiderers of a
And
of
I've received kinds. I've actually received a fan quilt in the course of doing this show.
But what you need to send John is a 600-foot-long chronological tapestry embroidering all his deeds. Not embroidering them factually, but embroidering them with thread.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
In 1986, you see Halley's Comet.
Yes.
And you see...
I also John hitchhiked across America.
Listening to Motorhead. Oh, and hitchhiking.
And watching the young ones. That's right.
So William the Conqueror has four sons. Not anymore. Had four sons. Mm-hmm. By the way, this show was suggested by a listener named David, who said, hey, how about why don't you do this... this time of troubles in British history. And I literally fell asleep reading his sentence about it. And I thought, I'm going to maybe have to tell David to go back to the drawing board. And then when I started to dig into the anarchy,
yeah,
I was shocked that I didn't know so much about this turbulent time.
I've noticed definitely futurelings that are Patreon subscribers that propose show topics to us. They've started to propose those topics with long paragraphs reflecting their own research.
Sometimes bullet points, sometimes an outline.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, on one hand, it's doing some of the heavy lifting for us, but on the other hand, yeah.
It's actually helpful. Mindy recently sent me a reminder of who had requested which shows. And it was, one of them was a listener who had just suggested two Polish cities.
Yeah.
And I Googled them and thought... I'm not sure what, and luckily I went back to the original email and he actually had a suggestion for how each show would go. And
yeah, because but they were just two Polish cities that he had a business in.
Yeah. His company has offices in these two medium sized Polish cities. And therefore,
yeah, I mean, there's something interesting about every city.
And but that was what he had outlined why he thought this was omnibus worthy.
But, and I was ready to do one or both, but then I realized that they were just like European Nazi Cold War stories. And I was like, I don't want to get, I'm already so typecast. I'm like the Fonz.
We're on a Hitler break.
Yeah. No Hitler for a month.
Our least. Promise to you, not counting disclaimers like this, our vow to you, the customer.
Also, I should reiterate, we are against Nazism.
100%.
Yeah.
Germany's been Hitler free for almost 80 years.
Some parts of Germany are Hitler free.
Sure. The chancellorship has been Hitler free.
That's right.
For 75 good. Years.
Good.
And I don't think omnibus could go 75 years Hitler free. You can't talk. It's one of the, you can't talk about the great conflicts of the 20th century without talking about the yo-yos responsible.
You got to go back to the Norman conquest, which was Hitler.
I promise there is no Hitler in this story of 12th century Britain.
Hey, did you watch The Man in the High Castle?
Boy, our anti-Hitler vow lasted until the next thought entered your head.
Okay, back to the Norman conquest.
Did you see the sheriff in Kent who put the Man in the High Castle?
You're talking about merch, Kent, Washington.
Kent, Washington, just yeah. Here outside Seattle. So there's some deputy sheriff or assistant.
Because the sheriff of Kent might also figure in, oh, in sure. a different way to this story.
Yeah, the Duke of Kent is in here. He's mad at Robin Hood. He puts Maid Marian in a tower. No, this is a guy who was actually just some Kent law enforcement guy here in Kent, Washington, one of the largest cities in the county.
Kent is a town.
And he was a fan of Man in the High Castle and put some Third Reich-themed stickers on his office door.
Oh, dear.
And got, well, you can imagine what happens to a policeman in America who has a Nazi rank on his office door.
Did he get promoted?
He was suspended for a week with pay, of course. You can't just let that kind of thing go.
Suspended by whom, though? The King County Council?
No, I think it was just, chief called him in and said, hey, you're not actually an Uberschlosser Kommandanter.
Oh, so he was feeling like the Man in the High Castle was something to aspire to in terms of...
apparently didn't understand the narrative thrust of the Man in the High Castle. And that was his defense. It's just one of my favorite Netflix shows. Of course I would have a sticker from that show on my office door.
Wait, but that implies that stickers, like actual fan merch from the Man in the High Castle, have like swastikas on them.
It wasn't swastika, but it was like an SS emblem on the guy's desk.
Oh,
do you remember when... We're not doing... This is a terrible Hitler-free show.
Yeah, Where are we now?
This show has like a record amount of Hitler.
We're deep in the Hitler weeds.
Do you remember when Man in the High Castle like rebranded New York subway cars as like Third Reich themed subway cars to really get us into the spirit of the thing?
I feel like that was during a time when I was refusing to read BuzzFeed, but you couldn't avoid some of that controversy. Yeah. It's crazy when somebody does something like that and you think, was there not a second person in your office? Was there not one? You didn't have to run this by anybody.
Did I just say it was Netflix? It's Amazon, right?
I don't know. You know, I just got my Prime account canceled because I didn't update my credit card information after I got my wallet lost.
You're a second class citizen in Seattle if you don't have Prime.
I don't have Prime anymore.
You're paying shipping to get cough drops.
They sent me an email that said your Prime has been suspended, and I was like, you know what? I don't even care.
Speaking of anarchy,
I know. Try this on for size.
Hey Jeff,
sit and spin, buddy.
I'm not Prime. What's the opposite of Prime? Choice.
Yeah, I'm Choice.
Composite.
USDA. USDA. Okay.
I'm divisible by several numbers. Jeff Bezos. Anyway, here's a perfect segue. William the Conqueror had four sons.
Yeah, right. Sure. Any daughters?
Yeah, he had a bunch of illegitimate sons and a bunch of daughters.
But four sons make it into the record.
What's interesting about this story is that, you know, all these pre-Norman, at no point in English history had there really been a queen of any kind. You can go back to Boadicea, I guess, if I'm saying that right. But none of these in Wessex and the like ever, it was just Edgar after Edwin after Edward.
Right.
So daughters were not traditionally part of royal inheritances, which is going to factor in our story and give us our strong female protagonist.
Hooray.
William the Conqueror's oldest son, Robert, you know, after he moved his HQ across the channel to Britain.
Conquered, in other words.
Won a battle at Hastings, got a tapestry out of it. You know, he kind of split his various holdings in England and France among his sons. His oldest son, Robert, I guess, was never a serious claimant for the English throne, even though he wanted it. William preferred to leave him in Normandy. They didn't get along. But his...
Was it like a Fredo Corleone thing where he just wasn't... Well, he got passed over?
He's the oldest son. Maybe he's a hot-tempered Sonny type.
Oh, a Sonny.
Salvatore. Yeah.
Right.
I don't know. There may not be a one-to-one correspondence between William the Conqueror's kids and Vito Corleone's kids. We make no such...
William indulges his oldest son, and he should speak he should listen when he speaks.
Although two people are about to take like an arrow to the eye. So that's okay. Kind of Corleone-like.
Mm. Did it happen in a toll booth?
It would have been. It happened in the New Forest. It happened while hunting stags.
Yep.
Nobody was eating an orange because... they would not have been known in the Northern Hemisphere at that time.
Right. Everyone was dying of scurvy.
Right. They wish they had eaten an orange, probably. William II is going to inherit the throne, but in the year 1100, he takes an arrow while hunting from one of his liegemen.
It's a Dick Cheney type story.
It seems to be a little bit suspicious. Historians have often wondered what really happened. If you're outside Hampshire today, you can go see the Rufus Stone, where William Rufus... took an arrow to the lung, and apparently that's not where it happened. There was a tree there. At one point in the 17th century, King Charles is like, you boy, tell me, where did William Rufus get killed? And they said, well, as you know, sire, the arrow bounced off a tree, and it's that oak tree.
The arrow bounced off a tree?
By the 17th century, that was the lore. There was a ricochet. It was something from Disney Plus's Hawkeye.
I don't know that much about arrows, but boy, that would have to be a lucky shot to bounce one off a tree.
Well, speaking of luck, this is actually the exact same forest where William II's older brother had died in a hunting accident a few years before.
Huh.
So William the Conqueror is now down to Robert, the oldest son he doesn't like, and his youngest son, Henry. And when William II is king, by the way, he has replaced... William the Conqueror has died. William II is king at the time he takes the arrow. Henry I, maybe not necessarily the...
Next in line,
because his oldest brother Robert is still alive. But he, crucially, is very close. He's on the scene when the arrow hits William II in the lung.
Grabs the crown before it hits the ground.
Yoink! He is off to London and seizes power quickly. He marries Matilda of Scotland, the Scottish king's daughter. we're going to have to get used to the fact that every man in this story is named William or Henry, and every woman is named Matilda.
Oh.
Apparently in the 12th century.
Matilda.
Your daughters and wives and mothers were named.
You waltz Matilda.
That's right. That's where Australia got the idea. Henry and Matilda have two children, a son named William, shocker, a daughter named Matilda.
Was there contention about his seizing the throne of England? Was England the prize?
Crown jewel?
Yeah, was it the prize over France, Normandy?
I think it must have been. I've been to both.
Yeah, well, okay. Right. If you think about the parking lots.
Northern France is a little bit bleak.
It is bleak. Right? But was it always?
It's full of hardy Briton fishermen eating chowders.
Yeah.
Which, you know, nobody could be against. Probably wearing weird woolen hats.
I always felt like that bleakness was a product of later development, but maybe...
Well, maybe it was all the brain drain to England. Everybody was like, hey, we got rolling hills and hedgerows across the channel.
Okay. Well, yeah, I see that.
We're getting on a boat.
If you asked me which one I wanted at this point, I would say England.
Henry and Matilda have two legitimate kids, William and Matilda, and dozens of illegitimate ones, of course, such as Henry I's royal prerogative at the time.
The two of them don't have illegitimate children.
No, that's true. It would be very hard for Matilda of Scotland to have illegitimate children she didn't know about. Henry I has a variety of mistresses and courtesans. But William Adelin is really the only male claimant to the throne, to the English throne. Matilda is born in 1102. By the time she is 8 years old, she is betrothed to Henry V of Germany, a very promising match for the King of England's daughter.
And Henry V is
20 years older than her.
What relation to Charlemagne is Henry V?
Is this the only thing you want to know about any German at any point?
Yeah, it just connects me to that cathedral in Aachen where I spent an hour taking a knee.
Henry's in a different German dynasty. He's a Salic king, but like Charlemagne, he has his eyes on the Holy Roman Emperorship.
Yeah, there we go.
Which is getting batted around Europe like a pig's bladder. But the funny thing is that Henry V is 20 years older than her, so I assume that's why they're not married immediately upon his betrothal to an 8-year-old.
But even that, only 28 years old, so not like...
No, he's not.
Nowhere close to the life expectancy of 54.
But you're not saying that it's okay to marry an 8-year-old if you're 28, John. I don't know what your age difference rule is, but the fractions can't work out.
Listen, I'm not a cultural imperialist.
How can we judge these people by the standards of our
today,
day?
That's right.
Well, even by the standards of the time.
Even in Afghanistan, the standards of today.
What's interesting to me is that she could be crowned queen of Germany even though they were not yet married. Her coronation happened at 8 years old. When it's really just...
a betrothal.
Yeah, it's a Facebook status.
How is that? How?
I don't know. The laws of the time. You want to have a queen. And the funny thing is, she is as a young teen, she is still... I mean, this is after her official marriage to Henry at 12.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. But she actually seems to be she's not just, embroidering upstairs or wandering the gardens. She's actually...
She's got moxie?
As a young teen, she's like got governmental administration duties. She and her husband march. And there's a lot of infighting going on between all the various kinds of German nobility over power and prestige, and specifically the title of Holy Roman Emperor. And so she and her 20 years older husband lead an army on Rome. They march on the Pope. They end up occupying Italy. At 16 years old, Henry goes back to Germany, leaving her, 16 years old, as the regent monarch in Italy, and he gets a papal envoy to crown him Holy Roman Emperor.
Really? And the King of England?
This is the King of England's daughter. This is Henry V of Germany.
Oh, I see, Henry V.
I knew it was going to be trouble. Everybody's a Henry or a Matilda.
Well,
this is the German king.
There's never been an English king that was Holy Roman Emperor.
No, but at this point, the English king's daughter is styling herself as Empress Matilda, even though it's a little bit iffy whether or not him being crowned Holy Roman Emperor actually makes her an empress.
So the first crusade was... Right about 1100.
Yes, and characters in this story do go off to the Crusades.
So, but this whole idea of like, okay, we're headed back. We're, you know, I'm going to make my 12-year-old wife the king of Italy.
Henry V of Germany never heads to the Holy Land, but he does. He is fighting wars on all sides in Northern Europe, mm-hmm. leaving Empress Maud, again, weirdly, the daughter of the sitting king of England, on the Italian throne in her teens.
Uh-huh.
But all this doesn't matter. She's just a woman. They call her Empress Maud. Another weird thing we have to accept about this time is that
Matilda
and Maud were the same name.
Uh-huh.
It's a Margaret Peggy situation, I guess.
She's just a girl in the world.
Because her brother, William Adlin, is almost certainly going to inherit the Norman throne of England.
Is he a younger brother?
He is, I believe so. Yeah, I believe she's older. But however, in November of 1120, about 300 English and Norman nobles are having a riotous party on the White Ship, the Blanche Neuf or something, some amazing new state-of-the-art Norman craft, the 12th century equivalent of a pleasure yacht, I assume.
Is it barged in the Thames, or where is it?
It's at harbor in Normandy.
Mm-hmm. In Normandy.
William Adlin is one of the noble, the heir to the British throne, is aboard. An incredibly drunken party is going on. Let me see if I can find...
And William Adlin gets hit with a ricocheting crossbow bolt.
There is so much drama around royals at this time. The chroniclers say that the ship at the time was overcrowded with riotous and headstrong youths, mm-hmm. which is, you know, as then as now, a recipe for a...
For a balcony collapse in a club.
A great party. let me see. The prince gave orders that they should have 3 muids. I guess those are, is that a measure of wine? No sooner was the wine delivered to them than they had a great drinking bout and, pledging their comrades in full cups, indulged too much and became intoxicated.
Mm-hmm.
The ship is full of treasure and the king's casks, of wine. It's a starlit night. While its triangular sail began to take the wind, 150 noblemen of the first families of Normandy, Anjou, and England were engaged in joyous words, all in brilliant costumes, their bodies adorned with narrow and trailing clothes of various colors. This is hot.
Yeah.
Feet shod in boots. I don't know why this is important. With long, straight, and curved tips.
Yes.
All 3 types of boots are represented.
Yes. Animated, I've been to one of these parties.
And here's where it gets good. Animated by beautiful and frolicsome young women.
Yeah.
Have you ever been animated by a beautiful and or frolicsome young woman?
Yeah.
They drew their too lively... I like how it's blaming the women here. They drew their too lively gaiety in cups of foamed wine and hypocras.
Huh?
I don't know if they wouldn't have been drinking if not for the frolicsome...
It's the hypocras, though, that puts it over the top.
Some priests come aboard. They're going to set off for... Another ship has already gone ahead and they want to catch up.
And are they on their way to England at this point?
They're going to cross the channel. They're following another ship that's already headed out. Some priests want to come aboard.
As part of an eyes wide shut situation where they're...
Well, it says the priests wish to bless the assembly by the torchlight of the orgy.
Oh, see how they do.
So maybe they're not very good priests. Anyway, they're insulted and mocked. So the ship goes off unblessed.
Right.
Taking off out of the harbor of Barfleur.
That's a bad omen.
It's a booze cruise. All these drunken nobles are yelling at the 50 oarsmen to overtake the king's ship,
uh-huh.
which is left earlier.
Spilling wine on them.
The captain has also been drinking.
A bunch of bros.
And it's a very treacherous part of the coast. It's a dark night, and they almost immediately run aground on a rock called, to this day, Keel Boof. I don't know what that means. Beef killer? Beef quills?
Well, no, keel. It's a.
No, it's. Do you think Q-U-I-L-L-E? Do you think that's part
of
a boat?
Maybe it's a beef keel. Oh no, they beefed the keel on the rock,
and the ship sinks. William heads off in a skiff and would have made it to safety, but he hears his. Half-sister, also named Matilda, but not Empress Matilda. Not Empress Maud. She is going down with the ship and crying for help. So he turns his skiff around and heads back to rescue her and is immediately overwhelmed with...
People in the water?
Arms and legs of people in the water, and his skiff is overturned. And hundreds of people are killed. A single man makes it back to shore, a butcher from Rouen, the only survivor of the hundreds who were aboard the White Ship on that fateful night. And for hundreds of years, this becomes like the momentous tragedy in English history. You know, wow. for centuries, this was their...
The king apparent is
Kennedy
dead.
Kennedy assassination. Yeah, the heir to the king is dead. So it's like the Kennedy assassination and the Titanic all in one. Imagine if the Titanic had gone down, but, you know, the U.S. president or the crown prince of Britain had been aboard. Henry I never recovers from it. They don't know how to tell him. Finally, his courtiers instruct a small child to mope around crying and looking sad, to wait for the king to ask him, you there, boy. Well, what are you crying about? And then the king is supposed to say, or the boy tells him, well, the white ship went down and your son is dead.
Yeah.
Is that a good way to reveal somebody good news? Make them ask?
Well, you remember when Don Corleone says, you know, I hear crying in my house, and yet you, my consigliere, have not told me what's going on. So you know, it is a thing.
They tried the same move.
Yeah.
I think I would be madder if nobody told me, and then they were like, we'll let a crying kid. Anyway, Henry. Well,
because this is in an era where the bearer of bad tidings might
get executed.
Face the sword, right?
So yeah, maybe that's the idea. He won't kill this kid.
Right.
Henry I does not execute anyone, but he falls to the ground in a stupor. It's said that he never smiled again for the rest of his life. Now, just before the boat left Barfleur, as the party is getting crazy, William Adlin, the heir, his cousin, Stephen of Blois, is aboard as well. Blois? What are you laughing at?
Stephen of Blois.
It's B-L-O-Y-S, a sound we can't really say in English.
Blois. Blah.
Speaking of Blois, he's got a bad case of diarrhea and leaves the party early. Mm-hmm. Which changes the course of history. It's the bout of diarrhea that's... Where will you be when diarrhea strikes? Avoiding a shipwreck, I hope.
Do you feel like there's ever been a case of... And I should say to our listeners who are eating while listening to the show, never eat when listening to Omnibus.
Because there might be medieval diarrhea.
There's always going to be something...
At any point.
...that's going to turn your stomach. But has there ever been a bout of diarrhea that's changed the course of your life?
Oh, I thought you were going to say of our time. No, I can't... think of one.
Right. I mean, most of the time.
I mean, at best, does having to run into a drugstore change my life?
I just mean in the sense that most of the time, those are discrete personal situations where you.
No one knows.
Yeah. Where
even
you
those
go,
closest to you don't know how close the call was.
Right. You go in behind the door and you come out some indeterminate time later, but it's not a thing where you.
You've grappled with your demons.
You don't get on the ship.
And you've emerged.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's hard to imagine a case of diarrhea changing history. I mean, if Neil Armstrong had diarrhea at the wrong moment.
Right.
That's why they had to fake the moon landing. But Stephen of Blois misses, he does a Mark Wahlberg thing and barely misses the 9/11 of,
oh man,
of 11/20.
Man, he would have taken out those terrorists.
And so he survives, which will become important. Now, Henry I only has one legitimate child left, Empress Maud. And she's also the queen of Germany, the regent of Italy. She's making people call her the Holy Roman Empress, whether that's legit or not.
And still a teen, even at this time?
Yeah. In 1120, she would have been 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So Henry I says, well, it's never been done, but I guess England's going to have a queen. And he makes all his barons swear fealty to Empress Maud.
What would the alternative have been? What would they normally do in a primogeniture situation? It would fall to an uncle or a...
Like in a case where women are absolutely barred from the crown?
Yeah, a case which is fairly common. What would have happened next?
I mean, in the rest of British history, the women are treated as a last resort, right? If there's no other direct heir, it becomes a woman before it becomes a nephew. Yeah, if she has a son, does it skip? Did that ever happen?
I think so.
I'm trying to think. In this case, it was a lot more loosey-goosey. Like, you'll see that a lot relies on who the barons can be persuaded to recognize, who the church recognizes, who is closest, you know, as in the case of Henry I, who is closest to London at the right moment,
right.
Who can get the crowds of London on his side. There's very much kind of an Arab Spring kind of a thing where, you know, the crowds of London are going to come out, and if they're for you, you're good. And if they're not, you're in trouble.
But the king is still in power. He still has oomph. So he has the time to enforce this.
He can say, look, it's going to be my daughter. It's going to be, you know, like nowadays the president could say it's going to be Ivanka.
Right.
And then the party has to be like, oh, okay.
I mean, that's not how it should work in America, but yeah.
What has happened in the intervening years is that Henry V of Germany has died, and Henry I has remarried Empress Maud, who is still going by Empress, to Geoffrey of Anjou, to kind of shore up his southern border, mm-hmm. to make a valuable alliance with a French lord to his south. And this is a big step down for Matilda, who is, by all accounts, pissed.
An empress.
She's been married to the Holy Roman Emperor, and now this guy, this bozo's just a count.
Yeah, just some bozo count.
They don't get along. They fight a lot. And a lot of that might be because she is now in her early 20s, whereas he is 13.
Oh.
So she's now the other side of the May-December.
How did he not get into a hunting accident? It seems fairly like she would throw him down a well.
It's hard to believe. They have a bunch of children.
Hmm.
But
well done, Duc d'Anjou.
But her hold on power is always a little dicey, even though Henry I plans to leave her the throne. Apparently, both Henry I and possibly certainly some of his barons and possibly the king himself believe that Geoffrey of Anjou might have designs on the throne. So they don't, even though the barons have sworn fealty to Empress Maud, they don't love the idea of her taking over. He loves that he has grandkids. You know, he loves his two grandsons that she gives him, including, spoilers, the one who will be Henry II. But at the height of this kind of familial power struggle, Henry I dies in 1135.
Zoinks.
Of what the chroniclers tell us is a surfeit of lampreys.
Hmm. I mean, I could see putting one lamprey on oneself, maybe two. But how many lampreys constitute a surfeit?
Yeah, he's already sick. And as a result, he partakes in too many lampreys. I don't know if he's mm-hmm. eating them in a pie or if he's just having them suck out his
humors. No, I bet it humors. Is. It's a leeching. I bet it's a leeching.
Yeah. Whatever the right amount of lampreys is to have in that situation, I haven't tried WebMD, but he has a surfeit of them. Keep in mind.
That seems like malpractice.
So the throne should go to Empress Matilda. However, Stephen of Blois, our diarrhea-stricken nobleman, the first cousin of Matilda, who has, by the way, sworn on his sword to support Maud's claim, rushes to London and, instead of advancing her claim, seizes power for himself. He finds the steward of the previous king, Henry I, and gets him to say that, yeah, on his deathbed, Henry I actually said, JK, I don't want my daughter to be queen. We've been fighting.
It would seem like in American politics, having missed the white ship because you had diarrhea would be a disqualifyingly hilarious problem.
In this situation, does the media know you had diarrhea in Iowa or New Hampshire?
I mean, we know now, fully 1,000 years later, so
we're still talking about it all the time.
It must have been recorded in the books. If Howard Dean can be excluded from contention for the presidency for just yelling a little bit, this guy's pooping his drawers.
What if maybe that's why Howard Dean was screaming too?
Right.
Maybe that's why what's his name had to go get electroshock.
Maybe in 1190, poop in your drawers wasn't disqualifying. Maybe it actually like elevated his claim.
Think what a bout of diarrhea that must have been that we know about it 900 years later.
I know.
Down through the ages, it echoes. So as I was saying, this was a time when really the crowds in London had to turn out for you.
Yeah.
And the crowds in London like Stephen. They think he's the man for the job.
Oh.
And despite the fact that he is just the nephew of the king who has a living heir, he is crowned on Boxing Day 1135, and the Blois dynasty takes over the throne of England.
Well, now that's not going to sit very well with Empress Maud.
Empress Matilda is furious. However, she is very pregnant.
Yeah.
Something that even your most diarrhea-stricken king doesn't have to deal with. And B, in France. She is not on the scene.
Now, anyone who has watched the television program Paper House, or as it's known in America, Money Heist, knows that being pregnant and in Spain is that does not disqualify one from being the main antagonist of the story in season 14 or whatever that was.
And that is what's going to happen. Matilda is able, although she is stuck in France, she is able to get her half-brother, Robert, the Earl of Gloucester, Robert Fitzroy, to declare for her. He controls his own earldom is in the southwest of England.
And Robert Fitzroy is one we know about. He appears.
There might be multiple Roberts Fitzroy.
Yeah, I
bet there are. Yes. But he is persuaded to support Matilda's claim. I'm sure promises are made to him. And so within a few years, the Empress Maud raises up an army and leads an invasion of England.
A further Norman conquest.
A second Norman conquest, leading to a bloody 15-year civil war, which even by the standards of the time, shocked and appalled the people who had to live in it and write about it. The chroniclers say that the times were so terrible that Christ and his saints were asleep, which is an unusual theological view of what makes for bad times. It's when
Christ sleeps.
It's when Jesus and the angels are taking a nap, and in the meantime, somebody's like, teehee, I'm going to eat a bat in China.
It's not when Christ weeps, it's when he sleeps.
He's not paying attention.
Yeah.
If he were paying attention, he would have said, no, there cannot be a bloody civil war on England's green and verdant hills.
It's the imagining of Christ as one of the Greek gods.
Yeah. Right? His attention has been diverted by, with Zeus, it would be a fair maiden.
But a fair maiden.
But you're not going to say that about...
A fair maiden being turned into a white cow,
Jesus doesn't do. Jesus has no other hobbies that you can ascribe to him. You know, Zeus could be playing with his thunderbolts. Because Jesus has no recorded pastimes, you have to say that he was just taking a nap with Saint Peter and all the other angels, all
curled up together, slumber party style.
It's fun. They're having a good time. So Maud has invaded England, and by 1140, but by the following year, thanks to the armies of her half brother Robert of Gloucester, she now controls pretty much all of southwest England, from Devon and Cornwall up into South Wales, all the way to what's now Oxfordshire.
I mean, that's the good part.
In the east. Whereas Stephen of Blois has tightened his hold over the southeast. And you're right. If you had to pick.
Uh-huh.
He has London.
He does have London.
He's got the museums in the West End.
Does he have Slough?
He does have Slough, right? If she only gets to Oxford. And so... the country is divided by what comes to be called the anarchy, because there's two different ruling families controlling different parts of England. Stephen is calling himself Rex Anglorum, the King of England, and his wife is Regina Anglorum. So Maud styles herself Domina Anglorum, the Lady of England.
The Lady of England.
And by the following year, she manages to imprison the king, Stephen of Blois, in Bristol Castle, and gets hold over the royal treasury and gets the church to plumb for. So in 1141, it kind of seems like it's all over.
Yeah.
Like Empress Maud, Domina Anglorum, the Lady of England, will be queen. She heads to London for her coronation.
How does she imprison the king and not have already taken London? Was he like out?
He's out fighting.
He was out gallivanting.
He's out leading armies.
Oh, I see. Oh, so they continued to battle army to army.
When I say this is the anarchy, like... It's a bloodbath. Anything goes. Yeah. So she heads to London for the coronation. This is like Hillary Clinton in November 2016. She's going to break the glass ceiling. And this time, Londoners are not having it.
Oh.
They find her unlikable and distant.
Oh.
She's proud. She likes nice things. She's not relatable. She's not I'll have a mead of wine with you kind of a queen.
She should have done a set at Glastonbury. That would have won him over.
Fringe Festival?
Uh-huh.
In hindsight, it's pretty easy to see that maybe these are criticisms that would not have been leveled against a male monarch.
I mean, there are a lot of unlikable male monarchs.
For sure. But what you've got here is a bunch of male feudal lords who are now being told, this woman's going to be your queen. She's kind of proud and likes nice stuff. Like, has there ever been a king in their experience who wasn't
proud and nasty
and liked nice stuff?
So you're saying that she was being accused of being a bossy,
exactly,
lady.
Hillary Clinton on the Today Show.
Right.
This is kind of the common, as you can imagine, this is the conventional wisdom of modern scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
I see. That here's a strong woman who's finally, against all odds, gets a position of power and has it taken away from her by scheming men who can't stand the idea.
Right.
So Londoners rise up in the streets, like when she has a scheduled coronation in the Abbey, and demand her removal. The church gets cold feet. The barons get cold feet. And she has to escape over the snow. She wears a white cloak,
yeah,
and crosses the Thames in the snow and ice to get out of the disputed, to get away from the no man's land between her land and her cousins.
This is all very cinematic. Where's the Hollywood movie? Just imagining the queen escaping, the strong female lead escaping under a white cloak.
If The Last Duel had a $30 million opening weekend, mm-hmm, we would absolutely be seeing Ridley Scott's The Anarchy. But now it may never happen. It's okay. It'll be an 11 episode.
Yeah, exactly.
Apple TV Plus show or
the
something.
Sinking ship.
It's Game of Thrones. There's people are taking arrows to the eye. People are having hundreds of bastards. There's a shipwreck. There's a long civil war.
You know, we
it actually
about
is
this.
Game of Thrones.
Why are you and I not writing this screenplay? We're just giving it away to all the futurelings. We could be doing it ourselves.
Look, Wikipedia gave it away to me. It's the least I can do to pass it on to some less lazy screenwriter than me. Anyway, so for the next decade, there are essentially two parallel governments running the country, despite the fact that Stephen of Blois is still a castle prisoner. His court is still claiming the throne, and in fact, he is shortly recrowned after Empress Maud's high water mark. This will make the story even more confusing. Stephen of Blois is married to a woman named...
Maud.
Correct. Matilda, also the only possible name. Matilda of Bologna is able to raise up an army.
How is she involved?
Well, her husband's the King of England, and he's stuck in a castle somewhere. He's freezing his butt off in a garret, a castle tower.
But she's Italian? How did they get married?
Oh, it's Bologne.
Oh,
it's
Bologna. Right.
There was actually recently a Jeopardy clue where I had to say that three different ways because nobody could decide. Nobody knew if it was Bologne, Bologna, or Bologne.
And what did they go with?
I have no idea what aired. It's Schrodinger's earldom.
I love the idea of you standing behind that podium going, Bologna, Bologna.
The new executive producer speaks French.
Oh.
And so he was not having anything but Bologna.
Oh, he said Bologna.
Yeah. Which is maybe it's the colloquial way you say Bois de Bologna. I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Futurelings. Please let us know if I should yell at my boss for making me say Bois de Boulogne weird. So they get revenge. So Robert of Gloucester is still leading Maud's army, you know, his half sister.
Uh-huh.
But Matilda of Boulogne's army scores a decisive victory against Robert of Gloucester and then takes him prisoner. So each army now has the other's male leader prisoner, which, as you might expect, leads to a prisoner swap, which Matilda might not have known about. Robert's guys might
our
have...
Our Matilda, not Matilda right. of Blois.
Empress Maud may not have known. So with Stephen out of the tower, that's when the church switches sides again. He is able to get recrowned, and Maud never gets close to a coronation again. She sets up a new court in Salisbury. They almost capture Stephen again. Like, decades go, 15 years go by. Almost capture Stephen again, but he gets away. Both armies are now too beaten down to defeat the other. I mean, it basically becomes the order of things in England for 15 years. There's this Cold War going on between the king in London and the empress in Salisbury.
And there are effectively two Englands.
Yes. The Matilda's son, Henry, is a promising young leader. He's the Duke of Normandy, and he has already married Eleanor of Aquitaine. We're getting into Lion and Winter territory here. And so he's now, well, he has an ambitious, powerful, brilliant wife. He now has about a third of England. And Stephen's son, his heir, Eustace, has died. And now Stephen sees a way out.
Huh.
If Stephen makes Matilda's son, Henry, his heir, then the war will end. And he's thinking, well, I'll just have another son and we'll call it off again.
Uh-huh.
But he died of an illness the next year. And so that essentially ends the anarchy because Matilda loses the battle but wins the war. Her son, Henry II, is installed on the throne. And Blois kind of becomes, as we say on the omnibus, an interregnum.
Yeah, we love that word, interregnum.
Where, you know, the Normans of William's line both precede and succeed him.
So Blois ends up being a dead end.
No more Blois.
And the anarchy ends with the Restoration.
And yeah, with a whimper, not a bang. Mm-hmm. Matilda stays in Normandy, where she lives out the rest of her days.
Going to the Reading Festival.
her tombstone, interestingly, points out that she is the...
Wait, she ends up in Normandy, not in Salisbury?
No, she leaves... decamps for the north of France and lives out the rest of her days there.
Oh.
When she finally dies, her tombstone notes that Henry was her father, mm-hmm. because King Henry I was her father. Henry was her brother, because one of her many illegitimate half-brothers was Henry Fitzroy.
Mm-hmm.
And Henry was her son, because her son, Henry II, became king. So even on her tombstone, our strong female protagonist is defined as a daughter... A wife and a mother.
Mother.
Because she came within a hair's breadth of being the Queen of England centuries before Elizabeth or whoever.
But don't you think maybe the tombstone is also just kind of a, like, all that is written on there because it's funny?
They wouldn't have been charmed by the idea of three people having the same name because that was literally what they were used to.
Right.
Well, of course you had a husband, a brother, and a... Or a brother, a son, and a father with the same name. We all do. I have six sisters named Matilda.
At what point did people start naming their sons Braden?
There has not yet been a Braden on the throne of England. But,
or President Braden, but that cannot last.
Which will happen first? Here's the situation I see. Meghan Markle gives birth to a boy named Braden.
Okay.
Some kind of King Ralph scenario happens with them. You know, lightning striking a metal.
Prince bleachers. Andrew results in the entire Windsor family falling into disarray.
Yes, exactly. Britain decides that it will only have a biracial king now.
Right.
And Braden I is crowned.
I feel like maybe more likely that the first Generation Z president is elected at age 35. And is
a YouTuber named
and
Braden.
Is a YouTube boxer named Braden who reforms our nation. He's the one that brings us back together and ends the anarchy that will surely begin in 2024.
Finally. We haven't had a good bipartisan boxer since Teddy Roosevelt.
Thank you, President Braden.
It's time for a Braden.
And that concludes the Anarchy.
The Larch.
Entry 024.DA1106. Certificate number 45359 in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are archived at Omnibus Project.
Two ats.
Our handles were at Ken Jennings and at John Roderick. Our email address for the show was theomnibusproject@gmail.com.
Send in all your historical corrections and French pronunciations.
You can go, and if you'd rather not, compose an email to Ken, which he will not read and I will not read.
I will absolutely read
Mindy it. Mindy will read it.
No, I reply to all of them.
Do you?
Yeah.
Even the ones that are like, hey, Ken, tell John that he's my favorite and I want to be his bride. You're like, dear correspondent.
Usually I'm like, thanks for listening, Betty. And then I forward it to you.
You do not forward it to me. I have stopped receiving marriage proposals, and I think it's because you're just censoring them because you're a prude.
I'm hoarding them all. You think people are sending marriage proposals to the host of Jeopardy? No.
Boo. Yeah, I think they are, but I think they're probably all 82 years old. Dear Ken.
I am happy to be the young, the 12-year-old Jeffrey of Anjou in this scenario.
I think you're Henry the whatever is how I think of you. If you don't want to email Ken and get a weird form letter in reply, you can just go on the Futurelings Facebook page and all of your questions will be answered
by
Futurelings. And people will be outraged. And you can see how many whiskey distillers are still mad about the My Whiskey episode. You can mail us things at P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. And we encourage you to support the show. This was a listener suggestion.
Thanks, David.
Our show today. If you support the show at the Washing Bear level, you can suggest a show. But there are many other levels of support, lower and higher, that accrue to you many benefits, including our monthly addenda show.
Remarkable boons that we deign to grant.
Boons. So go to patreon.com/omnibus, and there's almost an infinite number of levels you could join at, because you can make your own donation.
So many boons. Yeah, it is in fact infinite.
Right. You could do one. You could pledge 5.333 repeating dollars per month.
$6.81 a month. You will be the only person at that tier, and you can name it.
If you're going to be the only person at a tier, why not choose $60.81?
Wow. Wow. Hold on. Yeah. Hold on. Nobody is giving it the $600.81 level.
And there you go. Be the only one.
Guaranteed. Nobody's gonna match you. Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the anarchy we fear may never come, but if we descend into civil war soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.